This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whew, we have covered some ground and also some waterways this morning. Welcome back into More Outdoors. Let's figure out where we are here. We started off early and we got some big encouraging reports in that speckled trout started picking up again with this little increase in the warm weather. Hopefully that holds out. Everybody seems to be tired of the rain, though, and we got a lot of that planned for the next few days, so be careful if you are headed out. We also discovered that there has been chronic wasting disease. It's been positively confirmed in the state of Mississippi in a white-tailed deer. That is not good news at all. They are now implementing the CWD response plan in Mississippi. Hopefully it will not work its way into Louisiana, and hopefully this will be a very isolated case. It was a 4.5-year-old buck that died of natural causes. Mississippi Department of Wildlife and Fisheries and Parks conducted the testing, and the testing proved to be positive. Chronic wasting disease is an insidious disease. It affects what is known as a cervid or a hoofed animal. It could be a white-tailed deer, could be pronghorn, could be antelope, could be mule deer, could be elk. Any animal of that nature is susceptible. It has not been confirmed in humans being posed from the meat of an infected animal to humans. There's never been a case of that, but it can be extremely detrimental to the herd. There is no cure for it. There's no inoculation. The only way an animal can even be tested is when it's dead, because it has to be located, these prions in the brain and spinal cord. It's brought about an implementation of rules about crossing state line with deer. That's in an effort for the states where it has not been located and has been found in 24 states now and 3 provinces of Canada and actually 2 foreign countries. It spreads rapidly through a number of ways, and this is one of the ways that they try to stem the spread is to eliminate feeding of these animals. Supplemental feeding is what it's called in Mississippi. I guess you could call it legal baiting. The following counties, if you hunt in Claiborne, Hinds, Issaquena, Sharkey, Warren, or Yazoo counties, immediately supplemental feeding has been banned in those counties, and you could be cited if you're found doing that. So we'll stay on top of this, and hopefully there will be not other instances of this that are reported, and it can be contained and kept away from Louisiana. Alabama has not had a case of it either, and that to me remains a real mystery. Arkansas, Texas, our other bordering states, I have had it, and I guess there's no way to stop a deer from walking across the state line. You can put laws in effect for hunters not to transport their dead animals across, but there's no deer that I know of is going to listen to or obey a law about transporting across state lines. Anyway, that'll be another story for another day. Also, we just wrapped up an interview with Becky Larkins, Southeast Louisiana National Wildlife Refuges. What a great opportunity. I strongly suggest you call this morning because it does fill up rather quickly. I mean, imagine they give you all the paddle, the equipment, the canoe, an interpreter who goes along with you as a guide to explain what you're looking at, what you're seeing. It's a 3-hour paddling tour on Bayou Cane, which runs from Highway 190 right near Fountain Blue State Park, and it goes all the way to the lake. There's stopping points along the way. They come back up the same way, and it's a great way to spend a morning with your family or friends. It's called Paddling Along the Edge, and hey, your government tax dollars, that's what it pays for, so definitely take advantage of it. We also talked to David Cresson about this letter that some chefs, mainly in the New Orleans area, but some in the other cities, signed in with commercial fishing interests and also some environmentalists that want to oppose the Modern Fish Act, which is being considered in our legislature right now, not statewide, this is national, to make some changes in the marine fisheries management program. It's called the Magnuson-Stevens Act. It's got some problems. It's led to mismanagement, self-admitted. And these are some steps to rectify that. And very strangely, some chefs, I feel, were sold a bill of goods, didn't have a quite good understanding, clear understanding of what they were doing. And I think many of them, as David said, are now resenting the fact and hoping they can take that back because they were duped into signing on with this environmental organization. So anyway, that's where all that kind of stands. And right now we're going to talk about a book that's getting ready to be released. It's going to be coming out, I believe, on March the 3rd, not too far away. It is entitled The Craziest Fishing Tale on the Bayou. And it's well-named, it's well-titled, because I believe it is, in fact, the craziest fishing tale I've ever heard. Its author joins us now, Gary, am I pronouncing your name right, Alipio?
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked about that. Most people usually butcher it pretty bad. So
they say Alipio or Alipio, stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, well, it's funny when I get Mr. Alpo. I'm like, well, there's two eyes in there. So.
Right, yeah, they confuse you with a popular dog food. Gary, if you would, before we talk about your book, tell me about yourself and our listeners. What is your history as a writer?
Well, yeah, I started, you know, I got the bug when I was about 10 years old and in school just writing. And then, you know, through the years, I just wrote down you know, funny stories on sticky notes, anything that I don't know, I just thought was just interesting. Then, you know, through the years, I went to college, and oddly enough, I actually became a writer. So I spent probably about 20 or so years, more than 20 years as an advertising writer. And, you know, all the time, I just always had these stories rolling around in my head. So I think, you know, my grandfather took me fishing when I was probably about, you know, 5 years old, and I just had this story rolling around in my head for years, and eventually it just came to fruition that, you know, I wanted to tell something that was, I guess, about family. It was about fishing, and I can't tell you how many times I go fishing and we catch nothing more than an oyster shell or a crab.
You know, there's an old saying that 10% of the fishermen catch 90% of the fish, and I believe that's true. Don't feel bad. Most people, unless you're a professional guide or you have the luxury of being like me and getting to go with those people, most people do struggle when they go fishing. And even the pros and myself, we get blanked every now and then, so don't feel all alone. But I could tell from reading your book that, you know, there's some basis in fact there, and that you have in fact been fishing, because there's some hints that give and clues that give away that you know where you come from when you're talking about some of the things that happen when you go fishing.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times the blunders of you know, getting out there and going fishing, and you know, you forget to put the plug in the boat, or I think one instance we got all the way out there and we forgot to put the battery in the boat because we're charging it overnight. So, you know, there's this love of, I think, you know, some people are in it for fishing, and you know, I've got some friends who, you know, they post pictures all the time, but they never tell you about the times they go fishing and don't catch anything. So.
Right. Well, you know, there's these blunders happen. I've been with some professional guides, and one time we got out there and we didn't have a single hook on the boat. Try catching a fish without a hook. And then another time there was no anchor, so we had to drift, and you know, that wasn't fun. Just things like that. And of course, you laugh about them later on, but that's all part of it. And as you mentioned, you hit the nail on the head. People fish for different reasons. I know people who, it's all about the food. You know, they don't care about fun or any of that ambiance, friendship, camaraderie. They're in it to get fish and put them on the table. Then there's people who really could care less if they catch a fish. They just soon be out there reading a book. They enjoy being out on the water, being out in the weather, and being with friends at fishing camp. So there's a lot of reasons why different people, different fish. But for this book, The Craziest Tale, if you would, kind of sum up its message. You know, I don't want to be a spoiler here. We want to get people to get it and read it. But tell us kind of what its underlying messages are.
Well, you know, I guess the biggest theme underneath it is, you know, there's more to fishing than fishing. And, you know, originally I started off this tale as being, it's a modern day, you know, snipe tale. You know, the grandpa and the brother, they take the kid out fishing and they test him. You know, it's an underlining theme of, he's out there, he's never been out there fishing in a tournament before. So, you know, he's a Louisiana fisherman, he's been fishing. But, you know, when you enter these, you know, the whole point of the story is, you know, that he's an 11-year-old who enters his first fishing rodeo with hopes to win money, about $500. And, you know, at the time, the family's struggling. So, you know, hopefully he wins, you know, he's thinking, I'm the middle kid. Hopefully I can win some money and maybe our family won't have to get kicked out of our house. So, you know, he's got it for the right reasons, you know. Of course, He's trying to best his brother, who's always been in the limelight and always been the superhero of the family. So he wants to do something good for his family. But you know, he gets out there, and you know, the key with fishing rodeos is, you know, you need to catch the fish yourself. So for a kid who doesn't know how to fish, it sets itself for a fish out of water adventure. I mean, there's definitely a pun intended in there. So you know, he goes out fishing with his grandpa, and you know, he's a middle grade kid, so he has no extra underwear, and so it's a horsefly infested swamp. There's creatures all over. He basically runs into this part where he's like, he has to face a 2-footed bayou beast and a 1-armed pesky neighbor to win the greatest award of all. And, you know, I think the theme underneath is, you know, the hardest thing you'll ever do in life is the right thing. And you know, somewhere along the line, he catches a big fish. He lets go a big fish. He keeps a big fish. I'm not going to tell people what happens, but, you know, if you like funny, if you like fishing, if you'd like have a kid who'd like to like fishing, I think, you know, I wrote this story to try to inspire kids to just the love of nature and the love of the outdoors.
Well, Gary, I'm a big fan of the book, as you know, and it's more than a funny tale. It's more than about fishing. There's a lot of underlying messages in there, and I think that for young people to be able to read that, I think there's a lot of life lessons to be learned in the book.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show, because I think, you know, what I'm trying to, you know, I think once you got the bug on fishing, you know, that's your captive audience. I think I've got a newly 9-year-old. I take her out fishing all the time out at City Park. Her thing is, as soon as you catch a fish, she's like, hey, I'm done, let's go. I'm like, well, you know, luckily we're in City Park. We're across the road from the, you know, the hot beignets over at Morning Call. So, you know, another Louisiana tradition. So,
and this book, would you consider it a book that is to be read by adults and kids, or by adults to kids? Or
well,
all three?
It's you know, for, you know, the thing, a lot of people get in the car and they're going to go for a 2 or 3 hour ride before they ever get anywhere fishing. So this is it's a very quick, easy read. It's a middle grade reader, which is for people who don't understand that. It's ages 8 to 12 and grades 3 to 7. But, you know, like I said, I've got a newly 9-year-old. She loves for me to read the book to her. She can read it on her own if she wants to. Of course, she's going to want me to read it to her. But, you know, I think because it's a Louisiana tale and it's got, you know, a crazy family and, you know, a grandpa in there, I think anyone at any age can appreciate, anyone who's got a love for the outdoors and a love for fishing will appreciate the story.
I know this was published by Pelican, which is a very popular publisher of local authors. Are they going to distribute the book for you, or how is it going to be found?
They distribute the book. So, you know, anyone who's interested, I think March 1st is technically when it's sold. You can basically just Google Craziest Fishing Tale, and you're going to find it all over the place. So it's going to be in local bookstores. You know, it's going to be in the Barnes & Nobles. It's going to be in, you know, the Octavias and the Garden District book. But you can also buy it online at, you know, all your standard retailers, your Amazons and Walmarts and other places as well. So, like I said, just if you Google it, Craziest Fishing Tale, I mean, I have a Facebook page. So if you decide you want to follow there, if you're interested in seeing where I'm going to be and where the book's going to be in public, if you want to get signed copies and talk fishing, I'm more than happy to do that. And that's where I'll post things about, you know, where we'll be. So.
Is it a hardcover or paperback?
It's a paperback. Both? So, again, it's for middle graders. So we wanted to put books in kids' hands and didn't want to make it expensive. I believe it's a $9 book. We wanted kids to read it. That's the whole point of the story, is get it in as many kids' hands. And, you know, for one, reading's a big topic. A love for fishing, a love for outdoors, a shared for enthusiasm. I mean, one thing for having me on your show, you know, I think this is ideal, so.
Well, I'm a big fan of books and kids reading books, and unfortunately, we're kind of getting away from that. But then again, I see some efforts like yours to get kids' noses back in the books. And I got to tell you, last weekend, as a matter of fact, I picked up a couple of these simple, scary ghost story books and brought them to my 7-year-old granddaughter, and she was absolutely mesmerized.
Really?
And it gave us some really good quality time together, you know, something that with our big age differences, we could still share the same thing. And I couldn't get over how interested she was in it. So I'm thinking that, you know, books probably, hopefully, will never go away.
Well, I think that's like I said, all these stories rolling around in my head. I've got, you know, kids who love to hear them. So I want to, you know, push stories. And, you know, I think the reason I wrote is because I was a reluctant reader as a kid. I couldn't find books that I wanted to read. So I'm trying to write stories that are the type of things that I wanted to read when I was young. And, it, you know, it's, humor is a big aspect of it. How do you keep somebody's attention when you're fighting for video games and football games? And, of course, you know, today, everyone heading out to the Mardi Gras parade. I mean, try to put a book in a kid's hand today, that's impossible. But, you know, I think there are kids out there that, you know, they look for it. They long for adventures, you know.
Well, you go into the bookstores and you see what the business that Amazon's doing, and you know, it may not have been what it once was, but it's certainly alive and well. City Park Big Bass Rodeo, you're going to be out there. What's going to be going on then?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, they're doing a great job out there. I think I was a teenager when I participated in my first City Park Big Bass Rodeo. And, you know, what I love about today is it's a family fun event. Get on out there, catch a little fish. They're doing a good job afterwards, this thing called the Fistival afterwards. So if you're out there by the peristyle or by the morning call of the big area, come on out there. They're going to have, you know, food and fun and tents. And, you know, they've got these big giant fish tanks out there with live fish in there. So, you know, you might not catch yourself a big bass out there, but you can definitely see them in the tank. So, you know, there's going to be, you know, other retailers out there that are just, you know, talking about fishing. Come on out for kids. You know, anybody, I think, a young kid who comes out and fishes in the tournament, of course, you're going to get yourself a little trophy. No one's going to leave empty-handed. And, you know, I'm going to be out there with books and signing and talking about fishing and, you know, let's have a good time. So,
yeah,
I believe it's March 24th.
Right, out at the March City Park. 24th. And I'll be there. You know, a lot of people don't realize this is the 71st year, and it is the oldest freshwater fishing competition in the entire country. So I would say basically in the world, since I don't think anybody's had any fishing competitions longer than we've had in the United States.
You know, I love that about New Orleans. There's so many old historic aspects to it. So.
Yeah, and they've really, as you mentioned, fine-tuned it. They've turned it into a festival. They've included a kayaking division that's on Bayou St. John. They've added a lot of things to it to kick it up and continue the interest of today's, you know, immediate self-gratification. You know, kids don't have a lot of patience, but at this, it's a quick event. And there's a lot of activities, and certainly you're going to add to that by being out there. And we'll look forward to seeing you out there.
That's good. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope to see you out there, too.
And, Gary, a website if people want to maybe find some excerpts or find out more reviews or anything about the book?
Well, you know, like I said, you could basically Google The Craziest Fishing Tale. You can follow on Facebook, Craziest Fishing Tale. You can look on my website, which is my name, Gary Alipio. Again, the last name's a little hard to spell, A-L-I-P-I-O. But if you Google it or you Google Craziest Fishing Tale, you'll see my name, and it's all over the place. You just click a few links, and you'll be able to follow and, you know, get on the Twitter or get on my Instagram, and you'll be able to find out where I'm going to be and where the book's going to be and, you know, some talk fishing. And I'm actually pushing a little hashtag on there, what's your fishing story, and fishing story's the hashtag. So go on out there with your kids and go on out there when you catch a fish, just, you know, show the world that you're out there fishing. I think, you know, there's so many people out there fishing across the world. I think I remember there was like over 1.8 million kids went fishing last year in the U.S. Hey, let's get the two, you know.
All right, sounds good. Gary, look forward to seeing you out there, and maybe we'll run into Grandpa Grump out there, you know.
Hey, thanks again. Thanks for having me on the show, Don. It's great.
All right, Gary, thank you. There he goes, Gary Alipio, the author of The Craziest Fishing Tale on the Bayou. It'll be out on March 1st, and there'll be a retail store. You can check it out on Amazon, Pelican Publishing, and also there'll be a booth at City Park at the Big Bass Rodeo. I know a lot of you are going to be out there. Hopefully you'll come out and spend the day with us. All right, we got a break to take. When I come back, I'm going to tell you about the price of paradise, and that's going to be a higher price, and you may be asked to pay it through your hunting and fishing license. We'll give you some details on that. Right after this time out, you're listening to More Outdoors on WWL 105.3 FM HD2. We also live stream at WWL.com. And welcome back in. And the rest of this program till 9 o'clock is just me and you. So the text message board's open for you at 870-870, phone line at 260-6368. Boy, we have had a host of guests and field reporters on this morning. But this is very important information here I wanted to share with you this morning. I'm holding in my hands a copy of a document entitled The Price of Paradise, Funding Louisiana's Fish, Wildlife, and Habitat for Our Next Generation. And it goes on to talk about some solutions to a problem of short funding. A lot of people are very surprised to hear that here in Louisiana, our Department of Wildlife and Fisheries is almost virtually self-funded. There's no general fund monies that are dedicated to it. License fees are part of it, the major part of it. It used to be a time when the oil royalties, the state wildlife and fishery properties, generated some oil revenues, which increased the budget into the state. That has kind of fallen off. It doesn't provide as much money as it once did. And the fact that we have not raised license fees for the last 18 years. 2000 was the last across the board. Now, there was one increase that was put on. You may recall, coincidentally, a guy we had on earlier, David Cresson with CCA. CCA backed that small increase. I think it was like $5. And the reason for it was to help the saltwater license holders were the ones that bore the brunt of the extra $5. And it was to help increase the collection of fishing data. And the CCA had it fashioned with the legislature in such a way that if it did not get directly tied to the purpose that it was created for, it would go away. There'd be a sunset on it. And there was also a time limitation on it. And that being done, it got support and it passed. But outside of that, it's been a long time since we've had the cost of our hunting and fishing licenses go up. Part of the structure of this new program, and I got to tell you, it's almost like I feel like I have a secret document in my hand. I can tell you nowhere can you find this. It is not being made available to the public. It came to me from an anonymous source who will remain anonymous. I have shared it with a couple of the hosts of Hunt Fish Talk, and we're going to discuss this on our next program, which is going to be in a couple of weeks. But outside of a very few people, no one even knows this is going on. Behind the scenes, what's going on is the department personnel and the people who drafted this restructuring and price increases have contacted some lobbyists, and the lobbyists are presenting this to legislators who will see it in the session and get the chance to vote on it and adopt it or modify it or whatever. My concern is that the amount of time that you, the hunter and fisherman, the one that's going to bear the brunt and pay the price, is not going to have a whole lot of time to get these information on these fees and consider them and then contact their legislator on how they would like them to vote on it. And that is the democratic process in this country. And I don't know why this is not being made to the public. Well, actually, I think I do know why, but I don't think it's fair that the public is being denied this information. Let me go over some of the highlights or lowlights of it. And I am not opposed to this by any means. They're going to consolidate the licenses. We have such a complicated, convoluted structure. We've got licenses, 128 license types. You know, for non-residents, residents, active military, spouses of military, muzzleloader, turkey, quail, a duck stamp, charter boat operators, disabled fishing, big game trip, big game licenses, duck stamp. The list goes on and on. They want to consolidate that from 117 down to only 28 licenses types, which I think is probably a good thing. Yes, some people are going to get caught in the crossfire where they're probably going to pay more because they only wanted a certain aspect of a license, and now these licenses, obviously, to cut them down to that number, have to be more generalized and cover more things. But the proposed license fee numbers, I don't think are that bad either. Just to give you some examples, they're proposing that a basic fishing license for active military or student would be like $13.50, $13 extra for a saltwater license over and above the basic. So for $26, you can fish 365 days a year. I don't think that's certainly out of line. $20 on a basic hunting license, $20 on deer hunting, $10 for the waterfowl, $20 for turkey, and $5 for a youth hunting license. Now, they would have that Sportsman's Paradise license, which would give you all the privileges for $90, all the fishing, the hunting, and all the necessary special stamps and permits you would need. I don't think that's out of line. Part of the reason they're restructuring this is, and a lot of people are unaware of this too, what happens, based on the dollars of license sales, we get a cut, a kickback from the federal government out of Pittman Robertson and Wallet Bro money. And what that is it's money that's it's special taxes that are charged on hunting and fishing equipment that the purchasers and the manufacturers pay. And it goes into a fund, and then those funds are redistributed to the states based on their license sales. So if you've got high license sales in your state because you've got a high population of hunters and fishermen, or your prices are high, then you can recoup a lot of this money and help fund your programs. We miss out on that. Anytime you give somebody a free pass, like a senior or a child or a active military or disabled, you miss out on not just the money that you would normally collect from that person directly, but also matching federal funds. So this program, kind of while keeping some $5 licenses in place, and that's hardly no money at all, that will help capture some of those matching federal funds that goes with each one of those. So I think that is probably a good thing, because that federal money's up for grabs, and that's one way for us to get it. One of the things I have a problem with is, why do they not suggest that we get funding from the general fund to fund our Department of Wildlife and Fisheries? Let me tell you my reasoning. If you drink the water, if you breathe the air, if you eat the seafood, besides if you are an active hunter or fisherman, or if you just appreciate wildlife, wild areas, you take photographs, you like to hike through these areas, you like to paddle or canoe, where you would be classified as a non-consumptive user, you don't pay anything. It's all put on the backs of the hunters and fishermen. And we certainly get a lot of income and revenue from having bountiful resources of fish and game from out-of-state people. So we have a revenue-producing and a lifestyle-producing resource. But to manage it and fund it, it's only being paid for by the hunters and fishermen instead of the general fund. And I see nothing in this that recommends that we go to the legislature and try to get a cut from the general fund. That's one of the problems. Another problem is the amount of the budget. You know, when we had the BP spill, certainly we had to increase our budget because we had to increase the sampling to protect the integrity and the health of people who were eating fish and seafood. Well, that enhanced sampling and data collection is no longer existing. But we still have the $80 million budget. Why don't we cut the budget back since we do not need all of those programs? And by the way, and this is another topic for another day which we've talked about, a lot of those funds were misused. And there was one case, I call them the Bonnie and Clyde, some people who are operating a charter business and only because of the statute of limitations on the theft that they committed against this state has passed, they're not going to be prosecuted for it. But that's another story for another day. Anyway, there's also in this whole license fee proposal and restructuring, there's nothing here that says that commercial licenses will be raised. And certainly a lot of this money goes into managed commercial fishery operations. So I think that's unfair. And one thing I have a real problem with is they would like to tie the increases into the consumer price index. What that means is, as the consumer price index rises, so does your license fee. Certain amounts would be able to be implemented without going back to the legislature. They would become automatic. You wouldn't even get a chance to scream and kick about it. Other ones would have to go back to the legislature. I don't like it being tied to the consumer price index whatsoever. I think it removes it from the hands of the people who use it. And then I have a question that's texted in that would the license go from the date of purchase for 1 year? I don't see anything in here that changes that. And that's a very good point because that has always been a pet peeve. Some states you buy a license, it's good from the day you buy it till that day of the following year. Not so in Louisiana. All our hunting and fishing licenses expire on June 30th, no matter when you buy them. You can conceivably get a couple of weeks out of a whole license fee that you pay for a whole year. And I see nothing changing on that. And there's some more things I want to cover here And we'll do that when I come back from this break. If you want to talk about it, you got a question about it, you're welcome to call 504-260-6368 or shoot us a text, 870-870. You'll listen to More Outdoors on 105.3 FM HD2. Good Saturday morning. And welcome in. And another method to contact me is a text message, 870-870. It's simple. It's easy. It's very quick. And I'm getting some really good text messages in. I'm talking about proposed fees and restructuring of Louisiana hunting and fishing licenses. This is unknown to the public. It's being considered by the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. Obviously, they hired some folks who came up with some problems to what they see and some possible solutions. But the public has not yet been informed. I'm waiting to find out when that's going to happen. I've got a copy of the document in my hands, but I can't direct you to go see these increases anywhere. One of the questions, and this is a very good question, a very important question, is this going to affect the price of lifetime licenses? I'm planning on getting one soon. The answer is yes. Now, this is not in its final form by any means, and it hasn't been passed. This all has to go before the legislature, be hacked on, worked on, tweaked, fine-tuned, and then maybe passed or rejected in some form. But right now, a resident lifetime combination for hunting and fishing and everything you need to go with it except the federal duck stamp. I'm talking about the big game, the wildlife management permit, the hunting permit, the turkey stamp, the state duck stamp, the big game license, saltwater fishing, everything. Turkey stamp. Right now you pay $500. The proposed new fee, $1,000. Double the amount. My suggestion, if you're going to buy a lifetime license, buy it now before any of this even gets talked about, because it ain't coming down, it ain't getting any cheaper, and you're losing money every year you wait. I bought my lifetime license, I want to say the year was 2000, it might have been a little earlier, but it's been at least 18 years ago, and I have saved so much money, and it has been so convenient. Every year, I don't have to go looking for a license and getting absorbed into the price increases. Actually, although they say they haven't increased them since then, they've added some licenses since then. You used to buy a hunting license and entitled you to hunt everything. Now you got to get a big game license. You need a turkey stamp. You need a state duck stamp. You need a black powder permit. You need an archery license. So instead of increasing the license, they just add the number that you get. It's a way of kind of getting around saying our licenses haven't gone up. But I will tell you that was one of the best purchases I ever made. Now, your age has something to do with it because there's a very reduced amount for a senior license if you qualify for that. And then it comes to a point, well, how many years am I going to have on this not having to pay all those fees, which is, you know, right now about $90 a year for that Sportsman's Paradise license. But at any rate, $1,000 for a lifetime license, and that's for a resident. I don't see on here a non-resident lifetime license. I wish I would have bought one for Mississippi. Before I had the chance, they discontinued it. Like I'm saying, there's only 28 licenses that they're proposing here. So they used to break down the lifetime license by, in fact, currently you can get a lifetime license for an infant up to 4 years old, a combination, they hunt and they fish for the rest of their life for $200. I would buy someone that if I had someone that was a child that I wanted to give them a license. Because according to what I'm seeing, that's going to cost $1,000. There's no breakdown on ages. There's no breakdown on whether it's only fishing or only hunting, which we have now. This is a lifetime resident license for $1,000. Take it or leave it. That's a big increase. Now, to get back to the premise of this whole thing, and if you got some more questions about individual licenses, I'll be glad to answer them. Just text me at 870-870. Here's what they identified as the problem they listed. The problem is that the wildlife and fisheries, as I mentioned, it doesn't get state funding. It's self-generated, statutory dedicated funds, and then some of those matching federal funds. That's what runs it. So they've taken now, since 2009, more than $65 million. They've gone in, and we call it ripping off statutory dedicated funds from wildlife and fisheries to help cover state deficits. Can you believe that? Now, this money is being paid by hunters and fishermen dollars in these federal matching funds, and they're stripped, although they're supposed to be dedicated. Some of our governors, Bobby Jindal being one, Edwin Edwards being another, went in and took money from dedicated funds from wildlife and fisheries to cover other deficits from the state. They'll never get that money back. There's no payback. It just goes one way and never comes back. That is a problem. We need a law to verify and maintain and preserve forever money that's dedicated for wildlife and fisheries and spent in good faith by people who pay it through their licenses fees. It needs to stay for that purpose. All right, here's their solutions, list of solutions to the problems. All right, they say they're going to be cutting budgets, cost-saving strategies. I don't know about that. But anyway, it says, even with our cost-saving measures, which I guess there are some, if these license fee increases are denied, here's the threat. There'll be a reduction in the law enforcement agents who keep the waterways and wildlife areas safe. There will be a loss of biologists and other scientists who maintain the health of the wildlife and the aquatic resources. The loss of management capabilities for hunters, anglers, and commercial fishermen. Injury to these sectors would result in the loss of thousands of jobs at restaurants, convenience, and sporting goods stores, gas stations, and marinas. Another bottom line. Without the increase, there will be a loss of reliance on the self-generated funds, which will force wildlife and fisheries to become part of the state's budgetary responsibilities. Well, if the state is pulling money out of wildlife and fisheries as being dedicated, why shouldn't it be a two-way street and a department get some of the state budgetary money when there's a strong argument for the natural resources of this state benefit everyone, not just people who buy hunting and fishing licenses. Anyway, this is going to be the sales pitch in a nutshell, and there's a lot more to this, and hopefully this will be made public sooner than later, and people will get the message on this before it goes to the legislature and then in some form gets thrown out to the public, and they have very limited time to react to it. It's called The Price of Paradise. As soon as I find out that the document is made public, I'll let you know when and where you can see it. Until that time, we'll keep talking about it. It's going to be the topic of our next Hunt Fish Talk program, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. All right, we come back after this break. I'm going to get to some of your emails, some individual questions and comments that came in during the last couple of weeks and haven't had a chance to get to. We'll do it right after this pause on the More Outdoors program, Saturday mornings, 7 to 9. We'll be right back. And before I get to email questions and comments, I did want to cover the public meeting schedule that's set for the rest of this month and into early March. The hunting seasons and the wildlife management area rules and regulations changes have been announced. They're proposed, and they're waiting for public comment. Hope they'll call these special public hearings on those license fee increases and restructuring, too, but I don't think they will. At any rate, if you want to, for our metro, New Orleans area, the date would be February 26th. That's a Monday at 6 o'clock at the Ponchatoula High School Library in Ponchatoula. That's the closest one. There's also one in, they don't even have one in Baton Rouge. Lafayette. There is one there on February the 28th. But the one for the Metro New Orleans area, oddly enough, is not anywhere near New Orleans. It's in Ponchatoula, February 26th at 6 p.m. And you can find this list has been posted on the Wildlife and Fisheries website. It tells you about all the dates, the season dates, and some of the regulations for WMAs. One of the problems that I see on here, and if I get a chance, I'm going to comment on it, is the turkey season. I've got sources that tell me the reason the turkey seasons will move to where they are this year, and they even want to move them worse next year, is because there's research to back up that there's been nesting disruption from predators. So what they've done is they've moved the seasons back later. In 2019, The all three areas, Area A, B, and C, all will not open until April the 6th. I got to tell you, as a very avid Louisiana turkey hunter, by April 6th for the last few seasons, turkey gobbling, that is, has been over. And when the turkeys are no longer gobbling and breeding and the hens are nesting, your chances of bagging a wild turkey are slim to none. That is the challenge and the whole premise of a spring turkey season, is to hunt them when the gobblers respond to hen calling. By moving these days back that far, it basically takes that away. It gives you hunting season, but when you can't really successfully hunt them. That's why people like me go to Kansas to turkey hunt. People like me go to South Dakota to hunt. They go to Arkansas. They go to Missouri. They go to Texas. I think maybe their data is valid, but what good does it do if you take the opportunity to hunt the bird successfully away by moving the season back? Makes no sense. If you've got a problem with the season date or any reasons like that, I suggest you go to one of those meetings, and they're listed where the meetings are. Just go to Wildlife and Fisheries website. You'll find it there. All right, getting to some of the emails. I got this one in from Shalyn Perez. Gunning for a Cure. They announced the date, February 24th, benefits the Tulane Medical Research Center for finding a cure for prostate cancer. Great event. It's a tower hunt for pheasants at Stella Plantation. Went last year. We did a TV feature on it. Great time. Great sport. If you want more information, go to stellaplantation.com, and you'll find all the details. But it will be February 24th. Let's see. Next email. This one was from Tommy Austin. And he's the one that sent me the video about the duck hunters, in quotations, who were hunting waterfowl, ducks of all species, over flooded cornfields. And I tell you, it's something that does nothing for a positive image for hunters. It's basically hunting over bait. It's not allowed. It's illegal because it's unfair chase. And the difference between putting corn in a Louisiana marsh or putting water in a Missouri cornfield, you tell me the difference. The end result's the same. They allow that to go on. It's not allowed here. So I've got a YouTube video. We're probably going to be posting that and pick up discussion on that. It is high time that we actually consult the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and see if they can implement some changes with regard to manipulating crops with water as opposed to putting the crops in the water. Same end result, but they handle them differently. All right, I got another email in. Let's see. Oh, that one was about my shoulder surgery. Good luck. Yeah, well, that's about over. I'm about recovered on that. Also, we had a couple people always want to know, where can you get a rabbit hunting guide? And there's not hardly anyone who does that, and I've already mentioned the reasons why. But there is one place that we found, and one of our listeners found this for me, and it's Dream Hunts Resort. On Highway 1 South in Alexandria, and the phone number is 318-253-2930. And you probably didn't get a chance to write that down, but if you go on a search for Dream Hunts Resort in Alexandria, I'm sure you'll find it. All right, got another one. Someone was looking. It's Mr. Don. I'm wondering if you could refer me to any Louisiana decoy carvers. I'm looking to buy one for my new home if there's a local place in South Louisiana that sells them. I'm sure there are some gift shops that sell those, but for my effort to search for it, I would definitely go to the decoy carvers. There's a website. It's the Louisiana Waterfowl Carvers and Guild Association, and they put on a big show every year. It was canceled last year because of a hurricane. But if you go to the Louisiana Wildfowl Carvers and Collectors Association, just Google that, you will find lots of places, individuals, and you can get any kind of decoy or even any wildfowl or actually songbirds and other wildlife. You'll find it there. someone else wanted to get the information on the guest I had on about the deer tracking dogs. I have his email. I gave that out. It's Paul Cougette, and it's P. Cougette. That's C-O-U-G-E-T. Paul Cougette, P. Cougette at gmail.com. He belongs to an organization that for tip money, if you have a deer that has been wounded and you need tracking and you can't track it by yourselves and you need help with the tracking dogs, they actually have members that will bring their dogs, come to your lease and find them. Although just about every deer season is over now. I got this one in too. Someone said, Don, I'm not a duck hunter. This is Nick. I'm not a duck hunter, mostly deer when I get to hunt, but a bird watcher. Yesterday in City Park's Big Lake, I saw and got a not-so-good picture of a breeding pair of buffleheads. How rare are they in Louisiana? And my response to Nick was, actually, they're pretty common, especially late in winter. They're one of the latest ducks to migrate. They're usually going to be found in big open bays and lakes like Lake Pontchartrain, and they really love Lake Catherine. For some reason, it's a very pretty bird, but it's one of the smallest ducks. Big white crest on the head. That's why the name Bufflehead. Never seen one in City Park, but don't see any reason why they wouldn't. There's a lot of waterfowl in there that attract wild birds because of the safety factor. They eat fish and clams. They're not very tasty as far as a table bird, but very, very pretty. All right, I got some more emails here, a whole stack of them, matter of fact, but I don't have time to get to them this week. We'll get to them on a subsequent program. Reed Allaman, when he starts singing Coco Dree, that means it's time for me to start shuffling papers, wrapping up, turning off the equipment, getting the headset off, and getting ready to move on. Here's one. Oh, last tech minute tech. I bought my 6-year-old granddaughter a lifetime hunting and fishing license 4 years ago. She has a 5-month-old little brother. I'm planning on buying one. No way I'm going to pay $1,000. Looks like a loss for the state, at least in the short term. Get it now. It's still cheap now. Before the price increase. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. See you again next week with another edition of the Outdoor Show 5 to 7 and more outdoors here from 7 to 9 on HD 105.3 FM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.